You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jace. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from The Athletic, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great, formerly of WEEI. We are sitting up here tonight on my roof deck, the beautiful south end of Boston, staring out at the Prudential Center and all that life has to give.
It's the first time Jay King's gotten sunlight in, I would say, 48 hours. And we're at least I'm celebrating. Jay, an objective journalist, has no dog in the fight, but I'm celebrating Celtics' wonderful 4-1 victory over the Philadelphia 76ers.
I'm just celebrating the outside. I haven't been outside in a long time. We got people at the roof deck alongside us chatting. We're just podcasting next to the people. Anyway, Brad Stevens told us to get outside, so that's what we're doing. We're getting outside. Celtics dispatch the 76ers. We'll look back a little bit at that series.
Well, we need to get your fresh takes on the series, because me and John went for a while yesterday talking about 76ers.
We'll give my fresh takes on the series. We'll give a glimpse forward at LeBron James and the Cavaliers, how they match up with the Celtics, how the Celtics match up with them. We'll give our predictions.
Have you given a bunch of mailbag questions. I'm going to pick out the best ones, because the Rain and Jace is blowing up. Early days, we'd have to go with any mailbag question, but now we can be a bit more selective.
We got to trim them down these days. The Rain and Jays, we're moving up in the world. We're moving up the world. Thanks to the Celtics. The Celtics are compelling, and I think that's the only reason why people put up with us on a daily basis. We are the only Celtics podcast Monday through Friday, in case you guys didn't know. And if you don't listen to us, you're stupid. But anyway, let's start with a look back. Let's start with a look back at the Wild 76ers series, which it was more competitive than most five-game series. Like, after game one, the Celtics could have lost every single game. They could have lost the next four.
They almost did.
They literally almost lost every single game from then on out. Game five was just a war zone. And the end was perfectly Celtics, wasn't it? It was like,
I mean, any end with Marcus Smart just taking over and just doing whatever he pleased. The free throws thing still cracks me up, that he missed the first one and then tried to miss it and made it, and then immediately does like an interception. But he was huge down the stretch, and that basically is perfectly Celtics, just when he impacts winning.
The interception was just so outrageous. Like, if he had played for the Patriots in the Super Bowl, they probably would have shut out the Eagles. He would have been linebacker or free safety, whatever he would have been. He would have gotten the job done. He probably would have injured, like, four different people. He probably would have injured himself four different times.
He would have gotten kicked out of the game for unnecessary roughness of like, defenseless receiver on the first play. Like, let's be real here.
The Saric-Smart battle was pure theater. Like, those two guys are just ultra competitors. I've always respected Saric, but I think when you see what he does over a full series and you see all the key buckets he makes, and whenever they needed like a momentum shifting three-pointer, it seemed like Saric was the one to give it to him. Redick even missed a bunch of them.
Missed a huge one. Sixers were up two. A wide open one. He's open for about four
seconds. That one's going to haunt him. That one's definitely going to haunt him, because he hasn't been on a lot of deep playoff runs. Like, he was on those Clipper teams that were kind of,
that never got to the conference finals.
Yeah, that were kind of snake bitten in a lot of ways. And I mean, if he makes that,
wait, wasn't he on the finals team with the Magic?
Did he even play for that team though? Like,
I don't know. I'm asking wasn't you. Wasn't You're he the just NBA a bit piece? Just a guy.
Courtney Lee was a starter. I think he was on that team though. And he actually he might have missed a big shot in the finals that year.
Yeah, so he's a classic joke artist.
I don't remember. No, JJ Redick is my guy, man. JJ Redick, one of my favorite players to watch in the league. Don't disparage JJ.
I bet you're a big TJ McConnell fan too.
I'm not a big TJ McConnell fan.
Yeah, I was just going for vague coded language about race.
Yeah, that was a white guy statement, man.
It definitely was.
You just thought I love white guys. I'm not into all white guys.
It has to be a certain type of white guy.
Yeah. I love Redick because he's always moving, always on the run. He looks like one of the toughest guys to guard, even though he's not like a star. He's got to be just hell to guard. You got to be locked in the whole time. Marcus Smart did a great job on him. That helped decide the series. Smart was so good. Like, punished Redick in the post. I was watching that and wondering how much of that they'll be able to carry forward the Celtics into the Cavs series. Like, can you have Smart try to batter Kyle Korver if Korver guards him? I don't know. You might be able to.
Posting Smart has been something they've gone to against smaller guards for the entire season. It
was more last year, I feel like. Like, last year they did it a lot, and then this year they kind of got away from it a little bit.
But it's still something that Stevens is willing to go to, especially when he thinks he has a size advantage. And I think just as the matchups in the Sixers series kind of made it, they didn't have a great guard depth. The Cavs do not have great guard depth. Any moment Jose Calderon is on the floor should be a victory for the Celtics. Close personal friend of the podcast, George Hill, is going to be interesting to see how he defends Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart. It's just because I think Marcus Smart will have an advantage against Hill.
Hill's a good defender. Don't disrespect Hill.
He's a solid defender,
Hill.
But I think Marcus Smart has an advantage in him against the post. And if you want to put two guards up against him, like J.R. Smith or Korver, I still think Marcus Smart posting up is a viable option.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because in a lot of ways, I feel like the Celtics have matchup advantages in this series. Like Kyle Korver, I don't think he can really guard anyone in their starting five.
He can't guard Juice. He can't guard Terry Rozier, can't guard.
Okay, so let's talk about the starting five. They probably have to move Aaron Baines out of the starting five.
It depends if what the Cavs do. This is something John and I talked about last night. If they try to start Tristan Thompson, I think you keep Baines in just because you can do that and he improves your defense so much. But if they go with their traditional starters and Kevin Love at the five, yeah, I think they have to start. I don't know. Marcus Morris has really been struggling, but he is a guy who's defended LeBron before. I'm not going to call him LeBron stopper, but so either you start one of the Marcuses in there.
And what's interesting about the Marcus Morris starting thing is if he starts, that might force the Cavaliers to put LeBron James on him because I think Kevin Love will be matched up against Al Horford, right? And I think ideally probably the Cavs would want to have LeBron on Tatum. I would guess. Just to try to shut him off after what he's done. But if Marcus Morris starts, he might be able to post the crap out of Kyle Korver or J.R. Smith, if you have either of those guys guard him. So I'm interested to see how the Marcus Morris matchup impacts this series. I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics start him and try to use that matchup to their advantage. Marcus Morris, he had a classic bad Marcus Morris game five.
He's had a bad, not a great series for Marcus Morris.
Yeah, it wasn't a great series.
He did turn in a nice 1-for-10 performance, which even in Major League Baseball would be bad.
Yeah, he wasn't having a very efficient night. He missed some really tough ones, a lot of out of rhythm jumpers.
He missed all the same shots he normally makes.
Fine, fine. He missed all the shots he normally
that
makes.
That was my defense. Like, you can't get mad at Mook for missing shots. Mook's going to take shots.
Mook is going to take shots, and Mook will continue taking shots.
I think the reason they start Mook is because it's something Brad mentioned, the reason going back to Jalen and starting lineup. Shane Larkin's going to be out for the first two games at least. Who knows, maybe longer. And you're just going to want someone that be that backup point guard, Marcus Smart coming in the bench to kind of – they played a lot of minutes together, him and Terry Rozier, but you're going to want a primary ball handler on the court for 48 minutes, and so it just makes more sense for Marcus Smart to be that first guy off the bench, basically.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's going to be a very different series. obviously you can't defend LeBron James like you defended Ben Simmons. Like,
LeBron James is willing to shoot and is will make shots.
Yeah. LeBron, he will punish you if you defend him the same way you defended Simmons.
All right, so what do you think of Corrales's, I'm going to say, crazy theory where you just single cover LeBron James, let him, like, you don't let him, but you basically accept that he's going to go off and you just guard all the three-point, you basically guard the three-point line with the same kind of vigor you did with the 76ers, and you don't let people like Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, close personal friend George Hill, you don't let those guys beat you.
I think there are merits to that. I think if you can force him to get 45 without getting other guys involved, then that might be a win for your defense. So I do think there are some benefits to just kind of trying to make LeBron go wild as long as you can hold up individually in that matchup. I think one thing that does is that puts a lot of stress on your individual defenders. And given that the Celtics have basically like 7 or 8 guys that they're willing to go to, and I don't think this will be a Greg Monroe series at all. I think he'll be out of the rotation.
I don't know if they go beyond, like, Semi played 8 minutes in that game 5.
But Semi will be there. He'll be an option on LeBron. Off,
but I think Aaron Baines' minutes are going to come down unless Tristan Thompson is a big guy. But they're really going to play 8 guys, probably 7.5.
Yeah.
Consistently.
Yeah, so when you look at it like that, like if you force LeBron to go one-on-one, then all of a sudden you're putting more stress on those individual defenders, maybe picking up a ton of fouls. And if you're getting foul trouble, who the hell do you go to? It's like
Abnader.
Like Yabu at the four guarding LeBron. Like, there are... So I understand what he's saying. I understand why you would just want to shut off the other guys and make LeBron beat you by himself, because he's such a great passer and he has so many shooters around him and they can be so dangerous. But I think there's a downside to that too, and the downside is beyond just the fact that he can crush you single-handedly. I think so. There will be a lot that the Celtics have to juggle in this series. Like, when the Cavs go small with Kevin Love at center, like they've done over the first two rounds, and George Hill at point guard, and Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith, they just have shooters everywhere. And Korver is playing at a different level than he's played over the past couple of years. J.R. Smith is back to kind of being J.R. Smith. Love had a great series against Toronto. So that lineup right now is rolling. And I do think the Celtics match up against it. I do think there's switchable athletes and length and versatility can help them have a better chance of defending those actions than Toronto. And Pacers actually did a great job stopping the Cavs. Cavs didn't kill the Pacers offensively. It was more of the Pacers just couldn't score, which was kind of weird.
I mean, but that's the same problem you expect the Celtics to run into, is the Celtics have great defense, but they're not the most efficient offense. They consistently struggle to score points. And it's like, it's an interesting matchup against probably the East's best offense against the league's best defense, and then a mediocre defense against a mediocre offense. And it's whether or not the Celtics can, because I expect the Cavs to score, because that's what the Cavs do, especially when LeBron's playing over 45 minutes. It's really going to be if the Celtics can kind of keep up with them. And so I think the Cavs are probably going to score between 100, 110 points a game. It's whether or not the Celtics can consistently get buckets. And I don't know. With the way they're playing, I think Juice and Jason Tatum are doing great right now. But they're playing a lot of, like, individual, well, kind of one-on-one basketball. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they try to attack the Cavs defense, which has been historically bad, just like very not good for the entire year. Have they flipped the switch and turned it on, or did they just play the Toronto Raptors?
Well, the Raptors scored against them. The Raptors did score. Now, the Cavs scored a whole lot more, but the Raptors didn't have much trouble scoring for most of that series. So it's one of the things that will decide this series, beyond the LeBron factor, is whether the Celtics can crack through the creaky Cavaliers defense. Like, can they take advantage of the fact that the Cavaliers just really can't guard people?
They need they need 30-point quarters, like multiple
30-point quarters.
That's how you know, like, that's a rare thing that the Celtics did. In Game 5, they had a 36-point second quarter with a crazy 8-0 run to end the half. But that's what the Celtics need if they want to be in these games. Just because even though the Celtics do have the best defense, it's just LeBron's damn good, and surrounded by shooters, he's even better. And so I just expect it's going to be high-flying affair.
Yeah, it's going to be very different, I think, from the second round series against Philadelphia. The Celtics were able to shut off all of Philadelphia's shooters because they were able to almost like ignore Ben Simmons. Like that's not right, because they didn't ignore him. They spent a lot of focus like trying to keep him away from.
They did a great job of spreading themselves out at the foul line, but this is definitely my brand right now, but like, dude needs to shoot.
He does need to shoot.
I was thinking about it today. Like, would it have been okay if I asked him or Brett Brown, like, about his unwillingness to shoot? Or that would be a gotcha question from a journalist?
No, that's the most fair question there is.
Well, I got to wait till next year then. Because I think it's crazy how much that impacted the game.
Every game.
Did you see his shot chart?
Yeah, it was.
There was 3 shots outside the paint, all misses, by the way. And then nothing else. We got Aaron Baines scoring more, taking more threes than he's ever taken in his career, knocking him down in the corner because he's amazing. But I don't know. I've gone on long enough about Ben Simmons' cowardice, but it's a fun topic because he's so good.
Well, here's the thing. He could always get away with that before. Like, he was the best prospect coming out of high school. He was the number one pick coming out of college. He's probably going to win Rookie of the Year. He brought the 76ers, who were trash, to the third seed and the second round. And he
still averaged 14 points a game.
And he had an easy time with Miami. So that it was the first time in his life that his lack of shooting really caused that many issues, right? Like, it was the first time in his life that a team exposed him for...
Say it.
I won't say it. I won't say it. I won't say it.
For his unwillingness to perform in the moment. For his unwillingness to take a risk.
It wasn't his unwillingness to perform in the moment. It was just his complete inability to shoot outside of the paint.
It's not even an inability. The fact that he didn't take a shot changes the whole dynamic.
I wonder what he would look like if he did shoot. Would he make any of
that? I've seen him knock down corner threes warming up pregame. He like can do it. He probably needs to
Greg Monroe
chance.
Can knock down corner threes.
I know, but so can Aaron Baines. Like, you just need to be able to shoot it. You had that tweet about they had a huge closeout on Aaron Baines in the corner, and he had to, like, they had to close out to him. They had to pay attention. This is the reason Marcus Smart is successful, is because they treat him like he's a scorer because he's willing to shoot. He's not very good at it, but like, they treat him like he's a scorer, and it allows him to be more aggressive. I don't know how often I could go on this rant every podcast, and I think I have for the past 7 episodes, but it's still fun for me.
Yes. So, moving on to the Cavaliers, who have LeBron James, who is...
Noted good basketball player.
Noted willing shooter as well, especially now. He's become a much better shooter than ever before, which is a big deal. I'm interested to see who the Celtics use on him as a primary defender. Do you think Jalen is big enough?
That was my initial reaction last night, but I don't know who, like, if you start Marcus Morris, I think it makes sense to start Marcus Morris on LeBron James.
Agreed.
If they end up going small, but I think it's going to be Marcus Morris, Shemmy, a bit of Al Horford.
Jalen.
Maybe even Jason Tatum in there, although Tatum feels like anytime Tatum would get matched up on him, LeBron's just going to post him up. But I can say the same thing about Jaylen Brown. So,
yeah.
I don't know. There's never a great matchup for defending LeBron James.
This is very true. And that's what I keep coming back to in this series. Like, the Celtics still have the number one ranked defense. The Celtics are every bit like a pesky team, and they've figured out ways to score, going to Jason Tatum more than ever, and running more offense through Al Horford and unleashing Tito Rozier as the man who revives 90s Patriots heroes.
What do you think of Drew Bledsoe coming to the podium? Being the first guy at the podium.
Drew Bledsoe, he pulled the wool over everybody's eyes. He made everybody think he was this Celtics fan who loved the Terry Rozier thing.
A wine
he was just there to sell wine.
Of course.
God damn you, Drew Bledsoe.
But Terry Rozier just like brought it up to sell t-shirts. Like, it's a mutually beneficial relationship. Symbiotic is the word.
Symbiotic, yeah. So, Drew Bledsoe, everybody latched onto the Drew Bledsoe thing. He just wanted to sell some booze. And
he's going to make some Terry Rozier.
God bless him for it. He did a great job. He went, he was on, he was in every newspaper. He was in
every,
he was on every,
site, social
every
media,
TV
Twitter.
Show. He had a goddamn press conference at the podium. So Drew Bledsoe made the most of his, maybe his last opportunity in the, in the sun.
He still had happy feet in the pocket, and I thought I was never somebody, never a great quarterback.
Somebody tweeted me that Rick Meyer never would have worn the Terry Rozier jersey. And that was just my favorite tweet of the night.
Although, shouts to Drew Bledsoe for coming in 2001 AFC Championship game when Brady got hurt and thrown a touchdown pass. Huge moment.
Legend.
Needed that AFC Championship
legend.
Touchdown.
That was a legend. And then ceding his spot once again to Tom Brady the following week.
I got to just shout out Lil Steves. We basically just answered the question about who's going to slow down LeBron, but he asked that question, hashtag Rainy Jays. Talking about Terry Rozier is from our man Efren Ramos, who's one of the better meme creators out there. Rozier averaged 16.7 points per game against Cleveland this season. The only team he averaged more against was Sacramento with 22.5. Are we looking at another situation where the opposing team doesn't have personnel to guard point guards? I think this will be Terry's moneymaker. We mentioned George Hill, pretty good defender.
Terry's already got the moneymaker, man.
Terry's already got that t-shirt business on lock. Terry comes out with a new t-shirt after every game.
Yeah, and Terry doesn't need the t-shirt money because Terry's going to be getting a lot of NBA
Terry's
money.
Terry's going to be getting that bag for sure. But what do you think about his potential to just be a scorer in the series? Terry Rozier at home, I think there's a lot of potential there. He just seems to be way more confident of a player, and for a Terry, it seems like confidence is key. Now, like at home, he's taking and making step back threes. On the road, it seems to not go as well for him. I don't know. I think there's an opportunity there for them, but I feel like home court advantage is definitely important in this series, just for the shooting disparities between home and road. The splits are, it's kind of insane.
Yeah, I want to see. Like I said, like it. This is. It's hard to boil it down to just, is LeBron enough to carry the Cavs to victory?
And he might be.
But that kind of feels like what this series is going to boil down to. I do think outside of LeBron, like the Celtics have a more talented roster. A deeper roster,
definitely.
A obviously more defensively capable roster. A younger, more athletic roster. So a lot of it is just going to come down to, like, how much of that matters when LeBron is just so damn good. And that – it feels so stupid to say that on a podcast. Like really, that's what your basketball analysis boils down to? Like
sometimes it's simple, man.
But sometimes it is like that. Like, the Raptors, they spent all goddamn year changing their style and telling everyone they're different this year and they're ready for the playoffs.
The bench mob is key.
Yeah, the bench mob and – and then they got into the Cleveland series, and none of it mattered. LeBron ripped out their soul in game one, stomped it in game two, punted it over the fucking lake in game three. And then
what lake is that?
And then just, like, caressed it gently as he closed the door in game four. So LeBron is the dream crusher. He is the team crusher. Think about how many Eastern Conference teams he has just destroyed over the years. Like,
there was his whole article about it today.
His run of going to the finals, it was like the Derrick Rose Bulls, the Paul George Pacers,
started with the KG
Celtics. He put them to bed, the big three Celtics. It carried on to, like,
the Pacers,
the 60 win Hawks, then the Raptors. He helped convince the Celtics that their Eastern Conference finalist last year wasn't good enough. Like, LeBron just has piddled on the Eastern Conference for many years. And it hasn't mattered how good teams are. It hasn't mattered that some of those teams were close to great. I do think this is the most susceptible Cavs team in a long time. I think the fact that they almost lost the goddamn Pacers in round one suggests, like, this is not a juggernaut. I think the Raptors had mental issues that they couldn't overcome that the Celtics won't necessarily have. I don't see the Celtics backing down from LeBron James. And
the Celtics are great at late game execution, making the right plays, never like backing down from a moment. They're very capable of coming back from like 8 points in the final minute. They're also very capable of giving up a 12-point lead with like 4 minutes to play. So as much mental toughness as they have with adversity, they don't deal with success that well. They still are kind of blowout adverse, but I don't think you're right. I don't think they're going to back down. I don't think it's going to be a series. The Celtics certainly have the potential and the talent and the coaching to win the series, and that's what makes it so interesting. So, Jay King, what's your prediction?
Okay, so I'm going to stick with what I've been telling people.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you're consistent,
and,
at least.
And this, some people are going to say it's a hot take. I've said this since before the Raptors-Cavaliers series. I think if the Raptors had won, the Celtics would have had a lesser chance of winning the Eastern Conference Finals. I know it's LeBron, and I know it's the Cavaliers, but I think the Celtics match up well. Celtics in seven, Sam.
Woo!
Celtics in seven.
That's objective journalist Jay King picking Celtics in seven, not
Celtics
Homer Sam Packard,
in seven.
Who was going to pick Celtics
now,
in seven no matter
now,
what.
Now, am I petrified of making a pick that involves LeBron James, of all people, losing a game seven to a team that starts a bunch of guys or plays a bunch of guys
who have
never
really
been
there? Postseason.
This is true. This is true. I can't believe I'm saying it. I've got the Celtics going to the finals.
Which is wild. Which is absolutely wild without Kyrie Irving. I'm not even going to bring up Gordon Hayward. He doesn't count this year. But without Kyrie. And that's the thing that the.
He'll count next year.
He'll count next year. But the Cavs were damn good last year in the Eastern Conference Finals because Kyrie had that crazy scoring explosion. But if they can somehow slow down LeBron James, like, that is. There is no second option. Like, Kevin Love, as good as he's been playing.
He's a secondary guy.
He's
not gonna kill you by himself. And the thing about the Celtics, like, the Raptors didn't have the right personnel to switch on Kevin Love and get away with it. The Celtics do. Like, even if you switch Smart on him, it's not gonna be an easy post up bucket. Even if you switch Jalen on him, Tatum on him, it's not gonna be an easy post up bucket.
Speaking of trying to post up Smart, and I'm sorry to derail us and go way back.
Dario,
what did you think about that final play? Marcus Smart screaming out, "I got this!" But just the fact that they go to trying to post up Marcus Smart on the possession you need, tie game,
yeah,
posting up Smart, it seems insane to me.
So I have two trains of thought here. One, Dario Saric had been a boss.
He had been dominating Smart.
Dario
post.
Saric had been a boss. He had just dug in and scored a bucket in the post on Marcus Smart. He, what did he end up with? 27 points, was it?
Yeah.
So he
was the second best player for the Sixers that whole series.
Maybe the best player. I
defer to JoJo on that one, but you can make the argument that because there's some games where Embiid was not efficient.
Yeah.
Actually, Embiid's worst game was the game they actually won.
But whatever the case, Saric was a boss. So I don't hate going to him. However, when you attack Marcus Smart on a post up in the final minute of a tie game, you must know there is going to be a collision. There's going to be a collision, and it is going to go one way or the other. And
that man is filled with such rage at that moment, Marcus Smart, that he doesn't even know what's going on. And you're going to try to draw him into battle? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so. But. That's the thing. That was probably Philly's best option. Embiid didn't have much success in the post against Horford. He was probably a little bit out of gas after being ridden through the whole third quarter when he was just amazing. And Simmons.
Saw what happened when he posted
Simmons,
up against Baines.
Simmons, obviously, not.
Shouldn't even been on the court.
Not a shooter. That's a wild claim.
Okay, think about, like, the Sixers immediately went on their run to get back in the game as soon as he left.
Okay, but yeah, back to the Smart Stars thing. I wish those guys would just play one-on-one and televise it. They wouldn't stop until someone died. No lie. I think it would end in a death.
Sarge is definitely a tough boy.
He's a dog. He's a dog, that guy. Lots of respect for Sarge, but Smart, it's tough to post up Smart in the final moments and get away with it. And then actually, the next Celtics possession, Brad Stevens wisely didn't call a timeout, and Tatum got wide open underneath the bucket. Horford kind of missed him. Horford kind of missed him, swung it to Smart, and then Smart was like, I see you, son. Threw it down there.
Well, Tatum finished. The vision.
Smart does have the vision. So great that end sequence was just incredible from Smart. From the tip in to the stop of Saric to the missing a free throw he wanted to make, making a free throw he wanted to miss, then full on sprint, like all the way across the court into the corner. Totally traveled, but got away with it.
Absolutely. Many steps.
Totally traveled, but got away with it. It was just perfectly Marcus Smart. The only way that Eastern Conference semifinals could have ended. And now they've got LeBron, man. Now they've got LeBron.
That's true.
Again.
This is like, what, the fifth time the Celtics have played him?
So I'm interested to see what happens with Tatum in this series. I'm interested to see how they defend Tatum, who they defend Tatum
with. Well, that's one of the reigning Jays questions.
Let's hear it.
Assuming they put LeBron on Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, there's seemingly an advantage with the other guy. And so is that something that the Celtics can definitely exploit? I'm assuming you put LeBron on Tatum just for size, but does that mean Jaylen Brown has an opportunity just to go off? Or if they don't guard Tatum with LeBron, who's going to guard Tatum? Like, Tatum seems to be able to get to the basket with ease. His ability to get to the free throw line in that game was huge, and it's pretty much been huge, and one of the major reasons why he's been able to do this 20-point scoring streak. I just don't know what the matchup is, specifically with those two guys, Taco J and Juice.
Yeah, and I don't know how they'll guard him. I don't know what they'll choose to do. I'm interested to see what happens if LeBron does guard him, how much success Tatum can have, how much the Celtics can try to lean on him. This postseason, he's grown up, man. Like, he's been a grown-up all year, but...
He's a father.
He's a father now. Shout out
to Deuce, constantly taking naps.
He is a father, but he has been just a total... It's been an evolution since the playoffs started. Like, he was a low-usage role player for most of the year because Kyrie was in and...
He was a spot-up, three-point shooter to begin the year, and that's why he was so good.
And now it's like they're just running sets to get him kind of isolated on the move.
Their rotation patterns make it so it's like when Al Horford or Rozier's out, they're going to Tatum as the main facilitator of offense.
Yeah, and it's just like, bam, all of a sudden Tatum is scoring 20 points and getting to the free throw line at a much better rate than he ever did and creating all these plays and the alley-oop he threw to Horford in the final moments. Like, that's an impressive play. Like, the Celtics were just run. They had a game five where, like, it's dramatic to say the series was on the line. But if you lose that, you go back to Philly, you lose again. All of a sudden, you're facing game seven. And the chance to become the first team in NBA history to lose a 3-0 lead. So, game five, final minute and a half. And they're running everything through Tatum. They ran it all through Tatum. And he made great play after great play. The lob to Horford, he missed the layup, but Smart put it back in. It's just the evolution has been incredible. He's just handled every responsibility they've given to him. So now, if LeBron guards him, what do the Celtics do? Like, does that just shut them off?
I think you have to attack with Jaylen at that point. You have to basically attack at any non-LeBron point, and hopefully LeBron sticks on the perimeter guarding the three-point shooter.
Just run Smart and Morris post-ups.
I think that's
all day.
Unfortunately going to happen a lot.
Smart and Morris post-ups all day.
Here's a question from my own personal brain. Who's better right now, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown?
Tatum.
But Jaylen Brown's a much more capable defender.
I'm not convinced he's a much more capable defender. I think Tatum's a very capable defender. I think Brown is on his way to becoming a defensive beast. But I think Tatum's a very capable defender, and I think the fact that you can just run everything through him and he does so much so fluidly. I give Tatum the edge right now. Those guys, I mean, they get overlooked. Their talent level gets overlooked sometimes, I think, because everyone wants to just credit Brad Stevens. And
they're clearly good, and Brad Stevens has done a lot to like allow them to maximize their potential.
But those two guys are special, man. It's not just that they're good; they're special. Like together, the fact that the Celtics have these two guys, 21 and 20 years old, doing what they're doing in the playoffs, it's crazy. I mean, you look at the numbers Tatum has put up, the 7 20-plus games in a row to become the first guy, well, the second guy, including Donovan Mitchell this year, since Dr. J in 1972 to do that as a rookie. That's insane. That's insane. Nobody does what he's doing at this level for a winner. Nobody does what he's doing at this level for anybody. And he's doing it efficiently. He hasn't even shot the ball well from three-pointer.
He didn't even take a three
in the
last
playoffs.
Night. There was some Twitter speculation that he hurt his...
He definitely did hurt his left.
Do you think that affected his shot? Because normally you would see Tatum attempt more threes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he hit all his free throws. He was still getting to the paint. He was still catching the ball well. So I don't know whether it affects the shot. It might have, but he said he was fine. We'll see moving forward if it does. But, I mean, it really is incredible. He just averaged 23.6 points per game on 62.6% true shooting.
Not bad.
He didn't shoot the three-pointer well. Earlier this year, it was like, okay, Tatum is playing great, efficient basketball, but it's because he's shooting at an unsustainable level. Well, he's not shooting at an unsustainable level anymore, and he's still just dicing up lesser defenders. And so we'll see. He made a lot of guys look bad in that Philadelphia series. Poor Robert Covington came in with, like, all defensive aspirations
terrible.
And just got roasted.
He fell down. It's never good to fall down when you're defending.
Never good to fall down. We got any more questions?
Well, let's transition to my favorite topic, rating junk. This is from @TrevorBNJ, a known poster. Where does not trading Terry for Serge Ibaka rank in all-time age moves?
See, I don't think trading for Serge Ibaka was ever really an option. I mean, I'm sure it was on the table. Serge was getting moved. But when you look at the Celtics' perspective, they weren't going to win a title last year. They knew that. They didn't want to spend whatever Serge is making on his current contract. Because
he
was an expiring last year. The Celtics were never going to give up young talent for him. I don't think it was necessarily like Terry Rozier is untouchable. It certainly wasn't that. It was just, we're not giving up Terry Rozier for Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka is not going to be enough of a difference maker to send us to the finals and to allow us to win the finals. So why would we do that? That was what the Celtics front office was thinking. So, yes.
It's a great move.
Yes, it looked like a great move. But I think it was an obvious move. I don't think that was ever like a thing. Like, do you think trading for Serge Ibaka was like a move the Celtics should have done?
No, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Especially to give up a first.
Yeah.
And Terry Rozier? Makes no sense. This is from Coey Jupes, Joe Cooper writer. Who on the Cavs is the biggest coward? I'll let you answer this one first.
I don't think the Cavs have cowards. Except Rodney Hood. Except Rodney Hood.
Except for the guy who refused to play.
Who wouldn't go into a playoff game. So
I think that's the obvious answer. Well done. Who is more meme-worthy, JR or Terry? Terry might have passed
historically?
Him. Historically?
Historically
JR.
Speaking, JR. 100% JR.
Just for the, you trying to get the pipe text is alone.
My favorite JR moment was more of a private moment. Shout out to me.
shout out to J. King for having
so,
private moments.
So he comes walking into the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland wearing all green and like total golf outfit. And Scal was like, what are you wearing, man? And JR looked at him and he was like, it's the Masters this weekend.
JR was a known golfer. He recently was on Scott Van Pelt talking about the green he was going to hit the next day.
Yeah.
It was unknown if he was talking about golfing green or marijuana, but it's a tough battle. I think Terry's had a better season in terms of meme ability, but JR historically, he's got the resume.
Yeah, but Terry's got the juice right now. Terry's got all the juice. Oh, it is windy right now. I hope you guys aren't getting too much of this on the podcast.
Well, good thing, Jay, you invested in these little fuzzy doohickeys we got on our microphones right now. And,
is that what you call them, fuzzy doohickeys?
That's what I just did call them. I don't know. You were calling them fuzzy bitches before. I didn't feel like denigrating them. I think you're doing a great job for us. So doohickey it is.
Doohickey it is.
In terms of rating junk, I told anyone who's asked us about Kawhi and AD that they're going to get roasted. And this guy, Lucas Finkel, said, I'd like to see a scenario where we acquire Kawhi and then trade him for AD.
I like that one. I like that idea.
Lucas Finkel, I'm trying to look at your profile picture to roast you, and you got a U.S. Army uniform on, and I really got nothing to work with there. So
yeah, so thank you for your service. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. You got a dumb face. Another person who asked us about it was John Corrales. I don't know. I got nothing.
You got to personally attack him. You promised you would roast him.
John, you went on a many a rant last night's podcast, and it extended the episode beyond the required 30 minutes. We went an hour plus because you kept on talking, and it was I didn't know how to respond.
There's You're a coward, race. Too.
Yeah, running away to New Orleans. What a cowardly move. That's it, man. That's all the stuff we got right now.
That's all we got. All right. A few more days until Sunday's Game 1. We will be here every Monday through Friday, as we always are. We are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We are the best Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. If you don't subscribe to us already, you're stupid. But if you want to, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else. It is really getting windy up here on the roof deck. I'm getting a little chilly. I wanted to get some rays. It's not quite working out for me right now. We got overcast skies, but that's it for the podcast. LeBron is the overcast sky. The Celtics are trying to break through it, bring sunshine to the Boston area.
No, the kid writes for the Athletic. The kid's got words.
No.
You like that metaphor, or is it a similar?
I don't know. It was corny either way.
It was corny as fuck, but it was good.
And that's it for this episode of Locked On Celtics Podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Guys,